has been his lifestyle away from football. And the Ticats not convinced that that is consistent with someone who is serious about resurrecting a professional football career. Now, the Ticats will retain his rights on the CFL negotiation list, but I think it's unlikely he ever wears a Ticat uniform. Understandably, there is great sensitivity in Hamilton right now after the Art Briles controversy, and Johnny Manziel has a domestic abuse charge from 2016 that was dropped only after he accepted certain conditions. The Ticats, if Manziel decides he wants to come play in the CFL, would have 10 days to release him, to sign him, or to trade his rights to another Canadian Football League team.
Not physically in shape is unbelievable to me if you're trying to resurrect your football career.
Yeah, it's a pretty... That alone is... I mean, if you are hungry for a job in the game again, you are at the very... That's the starting, that's the foundation, right? Is the guy ready physically? And if the answer to that is no, imagine the lack of discipline at work at that point in time. So it all adds up to, it sounds like Johnny Manziel is still in gong show mode, or at the very least an undedicated mode in trying to come back. And seemingly in his head, I would suggest to you that if he's talking about just popping up to the CFL, thinking that it's a bit of a farce of a league and he doesn't need to be prepared or all that much ready to be ready to go. But just I'm not so sure why Hamilton, like, is this just happening to time up with the Briles thing and it's coming out? Like, why they're sandwiching these couple of things here together, I'm not real sure. But, you know, Johnny Manziel, when he was in college, was remarkable to watch, especially that freshman year. Like, it was just, it was really, truly amazing.
He's the only freshman to win the Heisman.
Yeah, and it just, he's just so far removed from that, or what he truly is as a human being is just that much more exposed and all the rest of it, right? But it just certainly seems like when they're list like red flags, right? You're going out specifically to see a guy, and between conditioning and responding to answers and presenting yourself for an opportunity for employment, you can't hide things that are red flags, like even from a personality standpoint and all the rest of it. So just an absolute mess still, obviously. And you've got to wonder if you had to go one way or the other, pushing your chips one way or the other, you'd have to lean at this point in time to him never playing again a single down of professional football, I would think.
Yeah, Johnny Manziel's always been the kind of guy who wants the quarterback lifestyle but doesn't want to be a quarterback. Like, he's never wanted to put the work in since he left college. That is clearly obvious, even back when he was with Cleveland and not even reading the playbook and not showing up to practice and to the facility and that sort of thing. He just loves the fame aspect. He loves being Johnny Football. But if you're not going to do the work, then there's no point. And that's just taking into account the football aspect of it, let alone whatever happens away from the team and away from their facilities and that sort of thing, where it's as big of a question mark and probably even more so. So you take all that into consideration. I don't know what the Ticats are doing, to be honest with you. Like, if I have Zach Collaros on my team, and yeah, he's having a rough year, I'm not really worried about Johnny Football coming in and maybe being my quarterback. I'm worrying about how could I make sure Zach Collaros is the quarterback that we had 2 years ago when he rightfully earned that contract of the most expensive player in the league.
They did take a step towards that yesterday in making changes to their O-line from the starting tackles that they had originally. Yeah,
it's interesting to me because, as you said, Troy, like if there are too many red flags physically and mentally in the interview process, like the interview process alone, how do you not...
You can't fool people.
How do you not convince these guys that I'm ready to go and I want this? It's bizarre to me, and I agree with you. Having heard that, and I was perplexed earlier in the season on why he doesn't come up here and do this, it's clear to I don't think he plays pro ball ever again either. And I thought there was a chance he could, and I thought there's a chance he could actually be good up here, and now he can't even get on an 0-8 team or have them even offer you something. It's rather perplexing to me on where this guy's head's at, and I guess it shouldn't be. We'll talk about the Labor Day Classic next. We'll hear from some Bombers on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
This Sunday, September 3rd, when your Winnipeg Blue Bombers take on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, you can join Chris Walby, Troy Westwood, and Darren Bombing for Manuk Denture Blue Bomber Game Day. And now you can get in on the winning and support your blue and gold. Blue Bomber away game 50-50 tickets are on sale right now. Go to bluebombers.com/50-50. That's bluebombers.com/5050. Funds raised support amateur football and other community programming in the province of Manitoba. Lottery license number 1482 RF. The Big Show at 33 minutes past the opening hour. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. Labor Day Classic, as we just said, this Sunday between the 7-2 Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the 4-4 Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And head coach Mike O'Shea and his team returned to practice field yesterday to begin preparations on the field for the Riders, and Coach O'Shea was asked if his team prepares any differently for the Labor Day Classic.
It's the same thing. You put some crowd noise on when you're out there working out in practice, but these are things that you have ready through training camp. You know, we did play in the first game of the season, so we spent some time doing this stuff in training camp, and we'll just sort of refresh that. But it's not anything out of the ordinary. I think on Labor Day, everybody's sort of practicing those kind of emphasis.
And speaking of that, head coach, having played them in their first game of the season, it was week two after their first week bye, head coach Mike O'Shea was asked about the differences between the two teams since that week two battle.
Well, I think we're both better football teams, you know, obviously. I think Saskatchewan right now is they're really rolling. I think at home especially, Kevin Glenn is taking care of the football and extremely productive. I think their defense is flying around. We said from the beginning, if you were to go back and ask me those questions or look at the questions you asked me from week one, I already said they were extremely athletic and that they were going to be a good football team, and they are. They're very athletic and they're a good football team. So they're not giving up a lot of points. They're scoring well. They're scoring in different ways. Defensively and on special teams, they're a good football team.
A 43-40 overtime win for the Bombers in Regina in week one. So they're used to the stadium. They've seen it. They know the noise. Close game, and everybody expects this one to be a close game, but probably much different teams that are facing off than they did in week two.
Yeah, it is. I like Mike O'Shea touching on there, and everyone's, I think, well aware of this, where both teams here, there's no two teams quite like the Rough Riders and the Bombers right now in the CFL, where it's basically as each week goes by, these two teams continue to get better. It's just a fantastic clash. It's been a while since you've looked at the Labor Day Classic with the Rough Riders and the Bombers both being so strong, and certainly when you reflect on the rankings of Stegall and Dunnigan and putting them at number two, the Bombers two, and the Saskatchewan at three. And I think most people covering the league would agree with that, that I'm not so sure if that's ever really happened at Labor Day game, that the teams have been so highly considered within the CFL itself. So it just sets up fantastically here. And what a wicked test. And I'm super geeked to see offensively what the Bombers, the game plan is always so much fun to see what Paulette Police does, and the absolute calmness and with the precision that Matt Nichols runs it. What's going to be the impact with Weston Dressler, and you know who's going to come out, and the disruption possibly that Wicks touched on, I think in SportsCenter he made mention of it. It's just there's so many different things that come into play here for this game upcoming. It's going to be a beauty.
Well, we'll keep going. Weston Dressler returns to the lineup as well. We'll delve into the game itself a little bit more in a bit. But Dressler returns to the lineup, and he was asked about returning off injury with the offense playing so well.
Not for a player like Weston. I mean, he's got to be one of the smartest guys in the league. Very accomplished. He's fast. He's agile. He understands the game. He understands defenses. He just works so well with our offense and with our quarterback. And you know, I just enjoy him having on the field. He's certainly makes you feel better when he's out there.
Weston Dressler was asked and was on TSN 1290 yesterday with some audio about returning to the lineup and what he thought of the team. He said it's very exciting offense, and it's tough to sit down and watch, as every athlete says. But what does he bring back to this offense that is rolling right now?
Yeah, well, I guess when you look at, so Thorpe likely to come out, right? And it sounds from Darren Bombing that they're looking to keep Flanders in, even having Flanders line up at slot. So it's, I think the transition will be pretty smooth, as you know, anytime you get a guy coming back into what looks to be a well-oiled machine, I think with the return of Dressler, this gets even that much more sort of well-oiled and dangerous, as good as Thorpe has been here. What is really neat about Dressler, guys? And, you know, I would have over the years people come up to me and go, have you ever stood beside Toby Enstrom? Right? And they just marvel at how small he was. And then you see him surviving and thriving and lasting as long as he has in the NHL. It is really, truly quite mind-blowing. Well, Weston Dressler is the same kind of guy. Like, you go and you see him, and it's like, are you kidding me, man, that you survive out in the field for as long as you have with your size and are as productive? It is mind-blowing to be around him to see how small he is. So just the level of intelligence to survive and to thrive, as Mike O'Shea touches on there, he's such a dynamic player. And, of course, it's just sort of, it's heaven sent, isn't it, that he's going to be ready for the Labor Day game and the Banjo Bowl, of course, with the old having him in blue and gold. I mean, that's something that had to happen, right? That's part of the Hollywood script.
Yeah, and it's going to happen with the 150 and two TDs, maybe the 125 and two TDs like he had in the first game against the Riders. And it's fun. It's awesome that every time he plays them, you know, wearing the blue and gold, there seems to be a little bit extra. And it shows out there on the field. And I think people are just kind of glossing over how good of a player he is and how well he was playing through the first 3 weeks of the season when he had 300 yards through the first three games. And the Bombers' offense, like, really, outside of the Calgary game, they have not had a poor outing. Like, they've been pretty solid right around that 30-point mark or over it in just about every single game this season. So I don't really expect them to miss a beat. And you're basically, you know, the fact that you're able to keep Flanders on the roster, you're swapping out T.J. Thorpe and Weston Dressler. And I think, you know, even though Thorpe has played well, you're getting a bit more out of Dressler at this point. And they're playing similar games as well. Right, but I think Dressler, you know, with his intelligence, is able to somehow, without blazing speed, he stretches the field a little bit more than T.J. Thorpe does at this point in his career. So, I don't really look at this as a concern for the Bombers because he's one of their top guys.
Yeah, I don't think it's. I understand the thought process of that when things are rolling so well. But Weston Dressler is one of those athletes and one of those players that no matter how well somebody who's filling in for you plays, you always bring him back into the lineup. He's that good and he's that talented. And as you mentioned, it's that going back to Regina, he always plays good against his former team, always has good games.
You just kind of wonder with how Kevin Glenn is clicking along. And I know that, like, especially in this market, it seems people go out right away, oh, well, maybe he'll toss in a few interceptions and all the rest of it. Well, they are managing the ball really well. In fact, they're protecting the ball better than the Bombers this year, Saskatchewan is. And, you know, the Bombers have scored 33 or more points over the last seven games. Well, over the last two games against BC and Edmonton, Saskatchewan has averaged 48 points, putting them up on the board. So it's, you know, the Bomber offense is going to be there and clicking along. But where's this Bomber defense, right? Like, Ed Tate asked, I think, the absolute question when you're considering the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I asked it before training camp. This was my biggest concern. It's still the concern at the midway point here. Is this defense, are they going to be the anchor of the team, or is it going to grow into something and become some level of a force, at least good enough to give the offense a chance to keep up during the course of games just like this with Labor Day, where you expect the Rough Riders at home to put up some points here? Can that defense get a little bit stout? And hey, the turnovers are great, but can, like, the two and outs, that sort of thing, what are we going to see from the defense this week?
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Troy and Brandon with you, and we're talking about the Labor Day Classic and hearing from head coach Mike O'Shea, by the way, on Twitter, Road Rockets, when we're talking about and ran the audio from Kevin Glenn saying Rider fans are the loudest in the CFL, and even if he was still a Blue Bomber, would lie and say it was the Bombers, even though it would still be the Riders in his mind. Road Rocket says, that's not fair. There are 75% less teeth at a Saskatchewan Rough Rider game to block fan noise.
Well done, sir. I'm going to that right now to retweet it. Well done.
So we'll continue to talk about that. We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line to get your thoughts on Kevin Glenn's comments, too, and who has the loudest fans at 9 o'clock. Back to head coach Mike O'Shea of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And Troy just touched on the second half of the season coming up at 7-2. Head coach Mike O'Shea was asked about his thoughts on heading into the second half of the year.
I don't designate first half, last half, first third, second third. We look at the next game, and obviously with a sold-out crowd, it's going to be like a playoff atmosphere for sure in there. It'll be exciting, and the fans will be fired up, and both teams will be prepared and ready to, you know, engage in a pretty physical game, I'm sure.
Should be a physical one indeed. What have you seen different from the Riders specifically? Is it like what has improved for them since the start of the year? Their offense clearly has, but what specifically about it?
Yeah, and I didn't even know like how much it's been their offense to me. Like, remember, they put up 40 in week two against the Bombers, and Kevin Glenn has played well right out of the gate here. So I think when you're looking at some change that did occur there, right, they're going to catch traction as that goes forward. But it's mostly their defense to me that has improved here, where especially like in comparison to last year, where last year people thought Chris Jones parachutes into Regina, you think there's going to be a response right away defensively. I thought there'd be a lot more improvement than there was last year. It was a year delayed. And now just wait until, if you haven't seen Saskatchewan play, just wait and watch how hot and furious this defense is. And they're working their way, I believe, very strongly in the very near future. Maybe by season's end, they could be the best defense in the land. They are humming along something fierce, and it's going to be furious out there. The O-line will be tested. And, of course, Paul Appelese and Matt Nichols, we've seen them so far be able to answer the bell whenever they've been challenged by a strong defense. They've been able to handle the situations with play calling and execution, and they're going to have to rely on that again this week.
Yeah, to me, it's all defense with the Riders. They looked in their first game against the Bombers like a team that had a bunch of pieces coming in that haven't played together, that were trying to get things figured out. Like, they looked almost a bit disorganized in that game. And watching them the past few weeks, even before this back-to-back blowout stretch, they are mortifying. It's fun to watch, to be honest with you. When you see a defense play the way they do and how physical, and they're fear-inducing. They really are. And they look like the Edmonton defense that Chris Jones had built right when they won the Grey Cup and right before he left. They're every bit as good as those teams, I believe. So it's going to be a brutal slugfest for the Bombers to try and match what the Riders can do offensively, because, you know, the Riders put up big point totals over the past couple of weeks. They had for sure two touchdowns against Edmonton, and I don't know how many points directly they got in that BC game, but five interceptions before Jonathan Jennings was mercifully pulled. You know, you look at those point totals and you might think the offense is picking it up. You know, the defense was as big of a factor in those games as getting those points as the offense was, I think.
Well, what's interesting when you guys talk about the defense like that is there was a question mark for me with the Bombers secondary, but by far, everybody I talked to over and over and everything I read and heard, the worst secondary was the Saskatchewan Roughriders coming into the season. And then you talk about the game against BC, look at last week in Edmonton, two pick sixes. It's going to be a really interesting game, of course, coming up this weekend. But how far the Riders have come and where they're going to go the rest of the season is going to be interesting as well. We'll take a break. Much more on the Labor Day Classic coming up. Darren Bomings is going to join us at 8. Rod Black is going to join us in the next hour to talk CFL Week 11 in general and the Labor Day battles. But up next, we'll go to the U.S. Open, and we'll talk some baseball as well on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Assiniboine Park Conservancy and Manitoba Brewers Association present Brew at the Zoo on Friday, September 15th at Assiniboine Park Zoo, showcasing the growing craft brewery industry in an after-hours, adults-only zoo experience. Enjoy craft beer sampling, food, and live music, courtesy of Winnipeg's Proud Sons, or the Proud Sons, I should say. For more information and to buy tickets, visit assiniboinepark.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show. Rod Black's going to continue the CFL talk with us. Top of the next hour, we're going to get into Blake Wheeler's interview with Ken Wee with the Winnipeg Sun in the next hour as well. We'll talk some baseball in just a second, gentlemen, but Last night, the ride for Denis Shapovalov continues. The Canadian tennis player was at the U.S. Open and moved on to the third round with a 6-4, 6-4, 7-6 upset win over eighth-seeded Joe Wilfred Tsonga. Here's Shapovalov with TSN's Mark Masters after the match.
Denis, you just took down a top 10 seed on center court at the U.S. Open. What are you proud of about this performance?
Yeah, it's another unbelievable win for me. You know, I grew up watching Roger and Rafa play on Arthur Ashe night match. So to have a chance to play here tonight, it's a dream come true. So I really want to thank the USTA for setting that up. And yeah, I've been playing some incredible tennis. I mean, Joe is a very tough opponent. So to beat him, and it gives me a lot of confidence.
What was your reaction when you found out you would be playing here at night?
Yeah, I mean, I was so pumped. I mean, like I said, I grew up watching it, so for me it was so fun to be out here. I mean, a lot of times during the match, I was just laughing, enjoying the atmosphere. I mean, it's nothing like any other arena. You know, it's so loud and so much going on, but it's so much fun to be a part of.
Yeah, and it's the biggest stadium in the world of tennis. So, what was the atmosphere other than the noise? What was it like to play on this stage?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, there's a lot going on. The screens are working during the point, you know, and yeah, obviously everyone's talking and moving around, so it's not that easy to focus, but you know, at the same time, it's so much fun to be part of such a massive stadium, and you know, just know that so many people are watching you.
You got Kyle Edmund next. You beat him at Queens earlier this summer. What did you learn from that match that could help you here?
Yeah, I definitely have to take it to him. He's an aggressive player, and if he's going to dictate it to me, then you know, I have no chance, so I really have to be the one to put the pressure on first.
Now into the fourth round at the U.S. Open to play a guy he beat earlier this year. This kid has just become an unbelievable story, not just in tennis, but across Canada in all sports.
Yeah, there's something real special about watching specifically a young athlete in a stage where they're just so brash and aggressive. And like the failure isn't even a part of them yet, right? It hasn't worked really into the equation, or like he's just so in such a neat place. You wonder, a la Eugenie Bouchard, is it like the bubble? Is something going to burst here? Is this the real deal? I saw a couple people pose that question on Twitter after this. But what he's doing out there, and like his court coverage is ridiculous. That backhand is just vicious. His play at the net looks solid. That there's I watched some of this, and there's a huge moment when Tsonga double faulted to go 4-3 in the second set, and that just sort of springboarded him ahead in the match here. But he's just it's such a joy to watch, like, his absolute aggression right now, and some of his winning shots are just beauties. Like he's locked and loaded, man, and you really wonder how deep he can go here.
Yeah, how deep? Well, I mean, look at the run he's been on over the past couple of weeks. Takes down Rafa in Montreal, yeah. And, you know, listening to one tennis announcer saying he's playing within himself right now, and he's dominating the number 8 seed. And that's what happened last night. Like, he crushed it. It wasn't like 7-6, 6-6,
right?
You know what,
yeah.
I mean? Like, he annihilated him, and Tsonga didn't even play that bad. It's just the kid is... He's special, and it's—I don't know what it is, but when you watch stars in their sport, they have a different kind of feel about them, like almost a different aura. And there's this charismatic swag nature to Shapovalov that there's just something. I don't know. There's just something about him when you watch him play.
Got to be careful with that. That's exactly what Bouchard.
No, not like this though.
Oh,
not like this. Bouchard had a lot of hype around her, for sure, but it does feel a little bit different with this kid. It really does, and he looked effortless with how, and even at 18, he's hammering shots,
yeah.
And the power was, I was amazed by how much power he's getting, when in reality, he's just a kid right now.
Well, and to be honest with you about comparing to Bouchard's rise, and I got to be careful how I say this, it's not meant to be negative, but like a lot of it was based around her sex appeal. And she's in a swimsuit edition for Sports Illustrated.
Yeah,
and
that was after her success, right? When she jumped up early on, what she did at Wimbledon and stuff, that all that stuff preceded what she accomplished on the court.
But when she accomplished it, that seemed to be like,
you know, the direction it went for her by her own like she had the comment that sticks out to me from Dennis yesterday is, I'm just having so much fun. I'm watching this interview on TSN in Arthur Ashe Stadium, which is emptying out. And for a kid that age to go in there who wasn't even ranked in the top 100 till after the Rogers Cup and is now going into the third round and saying, I'm just having so much fun taking in all the noise and taking it all in and enjoying it. And then you see Eugenie Bouchard and she commits 46 unforced errors when she's eliminated and just having zero fun in the fact that she's playing in the U.S. Open. Like it's fascinating to watch to me, not only how good this Shapovalov kid is, but just how he's embracing it. Like, probably nervous for sure, but just embracing the atmosphere and enjoying it, as opposed to somebody like Bouchard who's struggling so bad.
But when she was where he is now, she was doing the exact same thing. My only point to this really is that if I'm a Shapovalov in this situation, I'm learning some sort of a lesson from what we just witnessed a compatriot of ours in the country, like as a young upcoming star, and people started raving about what the potential and ceiling was and everything. There's a lesson to be learned there, I would think, for Shapovalov at this point in time to not, you know, to just to learn from and to avoid to some degree.
Which is fair, right? But if you want to compare him to Canada's men's star, I don't know. I feel more comfortable betting on Shapovalov to win a major than I would Milos. And I think he has more star power and star quality than Milos necessarily does. And his overall game, his all-around game, it's outstanding. Like, the way he's played right, like, Milos always had the big booming serve, but the best could figure that out, right? Once you stop that, then his game suffers a bit with Shapovalov and how well he's playing. He's got it all figured out right now.
What will be interesting is he does need to capitalize on this personally and financially. Like he's on a run here and he's got to stay focused. But much like Bouchard, he's got to sort of, this is your opportunity to make some scratch outside the tennis world. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes and how it goes for him as well. As for the Jays, they lost again, swept by the Red Sox 7-1 last night. They go to Baltimore.
That home record against the it's like 1-9 now, and I think they've been outscored 57-22 or something along those lines. That's amazing.
They're in Baltimore tonight, and we'll have the game for you right here on TSN 1290. Rod Black's next on The Big Show.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The TSN 1290 Summer Street Team is at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity fundraisers, and more. And we'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to give you a chance to win great stuff like Jets gear, Tim Hortons and McMunn and Yates gift cards, a Burton snowboard with bindings from Alter Ego Sports, and weekend road trip getaways from Explore Egan, Minnesota, including two-night stays at Egan Holiday Inn Express, a $100 gift card from Casper's Cherokee of Egan, and family passes for four to Nickelodeon Universe, Moose Mountain, and Sea Life at Mall of America, and much more. For more information on the TSN 1290 Summer Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki with you on The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour. NHL news and notes to come. We're going to qualify our next qualifier for a trip to Vegas to see the Golden Knights host the Winnipeg Jets and many other intricacies in that, our Hockey Nights in Vegas contest.
We've had some great names for some nifty nicknames, haven't we, with our qualifiers up to this point in time? We're having fun.
Gilles was in yesterday. I saw him. I was taking my recycling to the recycling bin, and he was like, hey, Jim Toth, I'm Jill. I just won.
Nice.
I'm trying to go to Vegas for the first time.
That was Boulay, right?
I believe so,
I
yes.
I believe, yes.
So thanks for listening. Congratulations. Nice to meet you yesterday when you stopped by the office to pick up your Jets gear gift card just for qualifying. And good luck to you with the draws. We'll have more on that in our next segment. Blake Wheeler also spoke extensively after a morning skate with the media yesterday. And, they're skating out at the Iceplex, and Blake Wheeler's taking part in that. And he has a great interview with Ken Wiebe in the Winnipeg Sun. We're going to touch on some of the things he said, but he also got into his
captaincy and everything else. A year to the day today, Blake Wheeler was named captain of the Winnipeg Jets, and it's also his 31st birthday.
First of all, he did one hell of a job last year as captain. Huh? He's got to love what he brings. I don't know what he's like, obviously, behind closed doors. We don't know that. We're not privy to that. But what you see on the ice and when things, a certain level, is just every single second that man is out on the ice, he just plays at a level that's inspiring. We kind of talk about Andrew Harris, not only inspires his teammates, the guys on the field, guys on the sideline, but people calling in, saying how they feel inspired, watching him play sport. That's a real special relationship you have, right? And I think Blake Wheeler's like that. I think Mark Scheifele is like that to a degree, where you're inspiring people who are watching you play a sport. It's a super cool thing. And in this day and age, where people talk about, and we're seeing it happen with contracts and such, guys at 23, 24, 25 being considered in their prime of their career, there's no question here. Blake Wheeler, what he's accomplished since he turned 27 years old, really, and what he's done over the last 4 years, and ultimately here over the last year, 2 years of 82 games played and 78 and 74 points, he has grown and matured into basically a point-to-player game from 29 and 30 years old. It's really neat what he's accomplished and where he's at.
Yeah, he turns 31 today, and it's the year anniversary of him being named captain of the Winnipeg Jets. So a great article, Ken Weeb, once again, at Weeb Sun Sports. Aces, as we know him, after two hole-in-ones. If you want to follow him there, and he tweeted out the article, we'll touch more on that at the bottom of the hour. NHL news and notes to come as well. We're going to continue the Labor Day talk and, of course, the CFL, and we're going to do it with a proud Winnipegger and TSN's very own Rod Black. Rod, how are you this morning?
Good, good. Good morning, boys. How are you doing?
We're all doing well. Westy's straight off the Milt Stegall golf tournament, where I was told his shirt was too small once again, but he golfed well.
Milt Stegall, when was Milt's tournament? I'm glad that we all got invites.
That was just yesterday. I'll have to speak to the organizers to see what happened there. Yeah,
that's okay. I mean, Milt must have been in fine form. Did he have a wrinkle on anything?
Yeah, he was well dressed. He looked good, but the golf swing kind of took away from it all, you know?
Yeah, I you know what? Milt's a great receiver, a great broadcaster. I just do not see Milt Stegall golfing, although, fashion-wise, I bet you he's right up there. I mean, yeah. You know, as people have often said, that golf is a great excuse to dress like a pimp. So Milt could probably pull that off.
I also fully see if Milt Stegall's not very good at golf and somebody said something to him, he would say, give me 3 months and I'll see you back on the course.
Right,
and then he would be up for that challenge.
Rod,
the Labor Day Classic, of course, is always a massive weekend in the CFL, not only because of the games and the matchups, but where the season sits. It's such a phenomenal season so far for the CFL, despite some of the stuff that's gone on in Hamilton and the negativity around it. But really good season this year. How big are these Labor Day battles with what's gone on so far in the CFL and the amount of close games and the parity and everything else, save for the East?
Yeah, you know, I would say, and I think we can rewind interviews from this time every year. You know, and the old cliche is that the season starts at Labor Day, and I would suggest that's probably a little hyperbole, but at the same time, I think the season really intensifies, and I think you're going to start seeing some market corrections in some places, and maybe not in others. I mean, I think you're right. I think this has been an incredible year in so many ways for the parity, for outstanding big plays, not just catches, but big plays. Every night is unpredictable. Every game goes down to the wire. I think the only constant has been that Hamilton's been awful. And and unfortunately, like you say, that dark cloud's kind of hung over that city. But they could get right, you know, they can get on the win column this weekend. Are they going to make the playoffs? You never know in the East. So, yeah, this is the weekend that you start to salivate if you're a CFL fan, because as Troy knows, he's been down that so many times before in these games. And you got, like, for Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, they got the back-to-back, which is unbelievable, considering what Saskatchewan has done as well.
Rod, quite a week in Hamilton. Your thoughts on everything that unfolded?
Yeah, you know, Troy, when I saw it come out, I'm sure I was like you, and I went, what are they doing? Like, I am a big believer, I think you are too, and probably a lot of listeners, in giving people second chances. And, you know, Art Briles will get a second chance somewhere, somehow down the road. But the old thing is, you know, it's too soon. We live in a world of social media now. We live in a world where there's zero tolerance in any kind of abuse. And when I saw it, I'm going, why? Your season is bad enough. This football is nothing compared to what we're talking about. And when it happened, I went, oh, no. I think they handled it right after. I just didn't think they handled it right before. To even contemplate, to even think that that might work was foolhardy in my mind. It was absolutely foolhardy. And I'm just not talking football. I'm talking even the CEO and a company. It would be a non-starter. And unfortunately, it became a starter. And, you know, and it cast a pall over it. Did I think Hamilton handled it better after? Yes. So let's move on, and hopefully something like that doesn't happen again.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Hamilton, because obviously I agree with you. I think it just – I'm trying to figure out how this – like the decision and what would go on in these meetings. And I guess it's just arrogance of we're going to do what we can to fix our football team, and we can – this won't be as big as we think it would. That goes on, whatever. Now we hear they worked out Johnny Manziel. This is just – he's talking to guys like Drew Edwards, and I'm wondering about you too, Rod, because you've been around the game for so many years. Have you ever seen something like this? Like, not just the 0-8, but everything else that's gone on around it.
Yeah, it usually happens around teams that are really on a death spiral, and they're just, you're grasping at something. It's like, you know, you're in a pool, and there's no life jacket, and you've never swam before, and it's all of a sudden you don't know what to do. And you hope that somebody comes and saves you, and it's kind of like that right now. It snowballed so badly for this team. And are they, you know, an 0-8 team? Well, clearly they are, but I still don't think they're as bad as that. They've had some opportunities, but every single time, and Troy, I don't know how many, you know, you played a lot on a lot of winners, but it's funny what happens in losing. And people say winning is contagious and you get momentum, but I look the other way too. It is also contagious when you start losing. And when, you know, their questions, and, you know, Dwayne Ford and I, we sat down with Ken Austin every week and the players and Zach Collaros. I have never seen a player lose his swagger as much as Zach Collaros has. And just, you know, and I like Zach. I think he's a good young player. I love his bravado. I love his swagger. But it's like he's a beaten man every week, and you can see it in his eyes, and I'm going, oh, my gosh. And that's what losing does. And perhaps the tonic is a win, and maybe that win could come on Monday. But I can't think, you know, it's funny you're tweaking me because I'm trying to think of teams. I have been around baseball teams before like that. And when they get these long losing and hockey teams and you start trying to get, you make a coaching change, you think that'll help. And it just goes on and on and on. And I'm a big believer in development, and it starts, right within your organization. When you're starting to pull out circus acts and try to hope for something like this, I don't see it ever, ever working. And so, unfortunately for Hamilton, I think they've got to just get their feet on the ground. And again, I think, Westy, you've been down that with teams like that before. I think June Jones is a good coach. And I think maybe they can just take it one, I know it's cliche, but just take it one day at a time and try to get out of this thing, because it is such a deep hole.
Rod, you're always up to date and know what's going on in the sports world. And of course, as Canadian fans of sports, it's pretty much impossible to miss out on what Denis Shapovalov is doing. How fun and exciting in what he's bringing to the game. And then on the other end, it's basically, are you at a place and watching her and her reactions and responses where you're basically ready and willing to write off any sort of future in the game to get considerably better for Eugenie Bouchard?
Yeah, those are good ones, Troy, because I've loved Denis Shapovalov. And you know, the great thing is people are pronouncing his name now. So it starts to roll off.
They always learn how to pronounce names after success.
When you're winning.
Right? Always, yeah.
So I guess in Hamilton, they're mispronouncing a lot of names right now. But I love the kid. I've watched him grow up, you know, because I've done a lot of tennis in the past, like from this 10 and 11 year old kid. And it goes back to that swagger thing. He's had confidence. I love the way he plays. He reminds me, and I guess I'm aging myself, he reminds me of John McEnroe. Now, he doesn't scream and yell and that, and he does, you know, on his own accord, but he doesn't get into it with the referees, although he did bash a ball against the referees. I guess he does maybe remind me of McEnroe, but I love the way he plays. And I think this is a great time for young Canadian tennis players. I was at a tennis court last week, and I'm watching these kids, and I'm looking at a bunch of different Shapovalovs. I'm looking like they all have his little swagger. I'm looking at the fist pumps. They all have their cap on backwards. A lot of blonde-haired little boys who want to become the next Shapovalov. And I think that was with Milos Raonic as well. And I just love it. I think it's awesome. I think he can go deep. I really do think he can go deep at the U.S. Open. And even if he doesn't, he's had the he's right in the running as a Canadian male athlete of the year. For Eugenie, it's so difficult. I just think she may have lost her way a little bit. And again, it's that word momentum, and she just doesn't have any confidence right now. Am I one of those people that believe also that she probably concentrated a little bit too much on the other side? Yeah, there's probably an element to that, but people forget how hard she worked. I mean, she does work very hard. She's an athlete, a high-performance elite athlete. Here's the other thing. The rest of the world has gotten so much better, and we're talking about players from all over. I think her hunger has not been satisfied, certainly over the last couple of years. Do I think she's capable of doing what she did a few years ago? I don't think so. It might have passed her by, but she's still an interesting watch, and you just never know. In women's tennis, especially with Serena away from the game, anybody can win week to week, but it goes to show you when Eugenie's struggling with some qualifier players and some players who were ranked so far below her years ago, I think the struggle is going to continue for her, unfortunately.
Rod Black joining us here on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Rod, we only have about 30 seconds here, but I did want to get your thoughts on this Riders-Bombers Labor Day Classic battle and how it sets up.
Love it. I think they're the two hottest teams in the league right now. I wouldn't have said that about Saskatchewan a month and a half ago. And, you know, I've done a few Bomber games now. This team looks complete right now. And again, confident. Mike O'Shea has them believing. I think their quarterback, they're led by a quarterback who believes right now. I think what else are we going to have? Probably, like you said, you have 30 seconds left. It probably is going to come down to the last play. And that's good for the league, especially with Saskatchewan and Winnipeg kind of renewing and rekindling that rivalry, because Saskatchewan hasn't been that good the last couple of seasons since they won the Cup. And Winnipeg's having a renaissance, you know, ever since last year. So I think it's the most compelling matchup of the Labor Day Classic game. So unfortunately, I won't be doing that one, but I'll tell you what, I'll be like you guys. I'll be watching it.
Yeah, for sure. Always a pleasure and always appreciate your time. Thanks, man.
Anytime, guys, and I'll anticipate not seeing you at the Milt Stegall tournament again.
Thanks, brother. Take care, man.
We'll pass that along. TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas. Your chance to qualify is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
12th caller through at 780-1290 will be the latest qualifier as TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights on Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations on the Strip, and $1,290 cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski, and then 5:15 on the Afternoon Ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph, or watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, September 11th and September 25th, October 9th, October 23rd, and November 6th. September 25th is my dad's birthday. Shout out to Frank the Tank. Love you, Dad.
Is your dad's... Somebody asked me, is his dad's name actually Frank?
Yeah. That's Frank Toth.
That's cool.
Frank the Tank. Been giving her for 82 years.
Yeah.
For more information, check out TSN1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with TSN 1290. Two qualifiers, weekdays, right here on The Big Show. We're taking our first one right now, 780-1290. And also, as I said, keep an eye on the social media for bonus chances to qualify. And I was talking with our PD, Chris Brooke, yesterday, and we're going to have a special on The Big Show thing starting next week after the show on some new technology that we're going to qualify another listener.
Really?
Yeah. You know me and my BlackBerry is a little...
You like to hold...
There's
like
some
to...
new technology out there, apparently.
We've moved past flip phones.
And we are going to qualify extra listeners. But on the show itself, 7:15, 8:15. And then next week, we're going to do a new thing. He's going to explain it to us all. The flux capacitor will get going, or we'll use some dilithium crystals or something, but it's exciting news.
Real super quick. Did you guys see any of the highlights of the Babos and Sharapova match?
No.
It was the loudest match maybe in the history of sports.
Really?
Just each lady screaming every single time they touched the ball. It was unbelievable.
Interesting.
Like, it was as much a shouting match as it was a tennis match. Holy smackers.
Well, we'll see if our latest qualifier is going to shout a little bit of excitement here right now on the Big Show. Our 12th caller through today is
Mr. Mel Harder.
Mel Harder, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great now.
Congratulations.
Nice. Thank you very much.
You ever been to Vegas?
Once.
How long ago?
Well, I can't talk about it.
Oh, not even the year.
It's a back that's when you epic. Just did. That's all you
listen,
said once.
Listen,
that's it.
That's strictly staying where it is.
That tells me the statute of limitations of 25 years has not passed.
No.
Excellent. Well, we'd like to get you there again. So you are now qualified for our Hockey Nights in Vegas. You could be one of 5 grand prize winners. We'll be making the draws once again September 11th and 25th, October 9th and 23rd, and November 6th. You're entered in all of them. If you don't win one of those, you'll go right up until the draw on the 6th. And just for qualifying today, Mel, you get a Jet Skier gift card.
Thank you very much.
Do you know what kind of show would you go see with the $1,290 cash, or would you just sort of maybe try to invest it
somehow? He might take the 5th on this. Mel might take the 5th on this, too.
I'll go see the best show I can go to.
There's a good answer. Nice Mel, general response right there.
That is
a veteran move.
A veteran Vegas
we'll leave
move.
It at that.
Nicely done, Mel. I appreciate what you're throwing down there, and I might try and pick some of it up. Mel Harder, our latest qualifier. Congratulations, sir, and thank you for listening to TSN 1290.
Take care, man. Good luck. Back when Vegas was Vegas, right? When what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Social media, that's way out the window. And cell phone, that doesn't exist anymore. That Vegas no longer exists, right?
The first time I ever went to Vegas was in the 90s sometime. And I had a buddy say, make sure you go to the club. And I'm like, what club? And he's like, the club. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, there's a club there called The Club. And it's the best thing ever. Because if anybody ever asks you, what'd you do? You just go, I went to the club. And they're like, what club? And they go, the club.
The generality is your friend, I suppose, right? Yeah, coming home from Vegas.
Mel Harder, congratulations, our latest qualifier. We'll do it again at 8:15. Up next, we talk about Blake Wheeler's comments to Ken Wiebe in the Winnipeg Sun on the Big Show, Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie, and this is your final week. Today's your final day to qualify. We have $10,000 in cash prizes to award to select selfie takers across Manitoba, and you could be one of the recipients. To enter, take a really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before today, August 31st, to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Show us an amazing photo or take a theme selfie in one of 5 bonus categories. Your picture could be worth at least $1,000 or even more. Our favorite picks in each of the below categories will be selected and revealed on Tuesday, September the 5th. Keep your phone charged and be ready to capture the best that summer 2017 has to offer. Here are the selfies we're looking for. Selfie of the summer presented by Robertson College is worth $5,000. Best animal selfie presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo is worth $1,000, as is the best food and drink selfie presented by Booster Juice. Best hair selfie presented by Aura Hair Group. Best outdoor selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center. And best smile selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca, your final day to get in on that. And this is the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Darren Bombing is going to join us at 8 o'clock. We're going to talk some hockey with Jonathan Davis at 8:30. And, of course, the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock as the Labor Day Classic grows closer. Gentlemen, as we discussed earlier, today is Blake Wheeler's 31st birthday, the captain of the Winnipeg Jets. Today marks the one-year anniversary he was named captain of the Jets. He's out skating at MTS Iceplex. He's been back in town for a couple months, and he talked with Ken Wiebe, the Winnipeg Sun. There's a great article if you want to pick one up on the captain, his thoughts on the season
Now, when Blake Wheeler joined Brian Munns filling in for Kevin Hrushevsky on the Don Vito roundtable earlier this year, he was asked about the changes and he discussed, you know, Steve Mason, Kulikov. And when asked for, you know, could this be the year, he sort of downplayed it a bit and he said, well, on paper it looks good, but let's just see till we get to training camp and how everything goes. Yesterday, he had these comments with Ken Weeb, once again in The Sun. It's got to be this year. It just has to be, Wheeler said after an informal skate at Bell MTS Iceplex on Wednesday. It's been a lot of the same thing. We have enough talent. There's no reason why we can't push this to the next level this year. So it's going to be about getting this group together and figuring out how we've got to play to win hockey games. A part of that is getting better goaltending, and a part of that is playing better in front of our goalies, allowing them to maybe not see as many odd man rushes or breakdowns that we have sometimes. We've got some young guys. Well, I'll get you to comment on your thoughts on that first part of him saying it's got to be this year. It just has to be.
That if Jets Nation could probably offer up one sentence, it would very much so resemble that, maybe even verbatim. So, Captain Wheeler is right there with sentiment shared by everyone who's a Jets fan.
It's almost creepy that it's identical, right? Like there's a level of hope and almost despair with that, right? Where it's like, come on, like this has to be it. Like there's been enough time now and enough development and that sort of thing. And I can't disagree with anything he's saying there. Like the Jets have this within themselves. It's not like a team that, or I believe at least, it's not a team that needs a bunch of major fall-offs from the clubs ahead of them to make the playoffs. If the Jets take care of their own business, if they do what they're supposed to do, if they improve their penalty kill, if they improve their defensive structure, there's no reason that they can't make the playoffs. I honestly don't think it matters what the teams ahead of them do.
Boy,
because if the number 7 scoring offense improves their special teams and improves their defensive play, that gets them into the playoffs.
Well, hold on a second.
Yeah,
I don't often disagree with, but that's you're talking about some teams that don't even have to improve anything that they need to surpass and get by Wicks, and teams that have put themselves in a position to be better this year. So when you say the number 7 scoring offense, and then the couple, like, those aren't little.
Yeah,
ifs or buts, right? Like, those are two. The defense has plagued this team since its arrival, and overall team defense, and then also the special teams, basically since Paul Maurice has arrived, minus the one playoff year, has been an issue. Those are two huge things, yeah, brother.
Massive. Gigantic.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm not downplaying the importance or the significance of that.
And you then even if both those things are improved, Wicks, you still have teams that are settled in there already in the Central.
Very good teams. Very, very good teams. But honestly, if they improve that, I to me, there's no way. There's no way. They've been close to the playoff line without those things. So if they get those things for the first time since that playoff run, I don't see how they don't get to the mid to high 90-point range. And that's enough to get into the playoffs in the West.
If you're a good hockey team, like, if whether you're the Minnesota Wild or whether you're the Chicago Blackhawks or whether you're the Winnipeg Jets, if you're a good hockey team, what is it harder to do, to keep your spot in the playoffs or to get into the playoffs?
To keep your spot in the playoffs?
Yeah, like if you've made the playoffs the last 2-3 years, is it harder to stay in the playoffs as the years go on, or is it harder to get into the playoffs if you haven't been there and you're a good hockey team? Like, take playoffs out of it. The Central Division, say for Colorado, is full of good hockey teams. So what's it harder to do if you're Chicago, St. Louis? Is it to stay in and keep playing well at a high level? Or is it harder to get to that level and get in?
Well, I'm going to dare say that put me at a good level and give me the burden of trying to maintain that instead of having to get better. And then once you do that, you have to maintain it, right? Like, having to maintain a certain level of play is, I believe, easier than it is having to improve.
Because you have it, right?
Yeah, you got it there, man. Now,
and you know what it takes.
Yeah, the Jets, some of the players know what it takes. But there's a lot of guys on the team that haven't experienced that level of success yet.
And, brother, there's maybe like the spirit of knowing what it takes but not being willing to pay the price necessary is also a part of the fabric of this team. I don't think we can deny that.
Well, here's Captain Blake Wheeler more so on the season. We've got some young guys, and they're still figuring the league out, but still putting up some big numbers. There's no reason we can't build on that number and play great defense at the same time. We score enough goals. Even if we don't score quite as many, that's still probably top 10 in this league. You'll win a lot of hockey games with the amount of goals we score. We just have to work on playing better D. We're still a young group, but we've been together for a couple of years now. We've added a couple of new faces, so just get everyone on the same page. That's the biggest key.
And I wonder, he references the youth, and when you're talking Laine and Ehlers, for sure there's a defensive step to be taken. But ultimately, I can't help but wonder how much of the overall Team D that needs to get better is holding hands with the systems. Like, are they in the best defensive systems that would allow them to play at the highest level possible, thinking of some of the nightmares that seem to develop in the D zone when they're chasing, playing in the man that we see or have seen too often in the past, you know? So it's not just personnel and what they do out there. I think it's walking hand in hand with the systems in place maybe as well.
I'll even go a step further here. From the day this season ended, all we've heard from, regardless of which player, which coach, or the GM, is defense, specialty teams, and penalties. Defense, specialty teams, but defense more so than anything. We've got to play better defense. Cheveldayoff was on the NHL Network. That's what killed us. Maurice, we'll continue to grow youth, blah, blah, blah. If everybody is so focused on this,
how can you miss it?
I don't know how it doesn't get better. I really don't.
But people, have they not been coming into everyone before, knew last year?
I don't think so.
That's why, where you can make, you know what, to me, Jim, where you can fail miserably there is by having the wrong systems in place.
Well, yeah, I guess. But then, like, that's why I think he starts this with, it's got to be this year. Because if it's not, there's a coach going somewhere.
Yeah.
And if it's not, somebody else is being brought in. And I would dare say, to steal a line from you, Troy, that there's going to be changes if this thing doesn't go well this year.
Yeah,
and I'm talking about players. I'm talking about it's been 7 years. We're on paper, we should be a playoff team. And if it's not getting done, it means the players or the coaches aren't getting it done.
The players changing is difficult in this league, though, because you're talking guaranteed contracts. So, yeah, you can, you know, pick your player that might struggle and you got to try and trade that. Well, that's way easier said than done. You know, and then maybe the point that you're bringing is, okay, well, then you get the same group by and large, or for the most part, the same group to go through another head coach. And what do you do in that situation? But ultimately, guys, like, to me, it's the defense that Blake Wheeler's talking about here. It is as much about systems, I believe, as it is about personnel and some level of dedication,
like,
by them.
Systems and structure.
Yes.
However you want to term that, right?
Yeah,
like, there was a puzzling, strict adherence to playing man.
Yeah.
Almost to a fault, right?
Absolutely.
Like, where it was, no matter what, this is what we have to do. And you just don't see that as much in the NHL nowadays. It can be successful. You just have to be extremely disciplined at it. And I don't think the Jets, last year at least, had the personnel to pull that off.
But during the year, I talked to some players about this and mentioned this on the show, that man is where the NHL is going because of the speed. If you play a system that isn't man, the speed kills you. And because the league is so fast now, that you sort of have to get fast. That's where it's gone to youth, is you've got to get fast players to keep up in the man system. Because if you just play a zone or whatever you want to call it, the speed of this league will kill you.
I do not understand that.
It's much like basketball. When you play a zone defense, how do you beat it? You shoot. And if you can shoot, you've got to go man-to-man to shut down your shooters.
I don't see the comparison there to basketball, man. But from a defensive standpoint, if you're dealing with... The Jets should have speed, you would think, to be able to deal with things in a like when you're talking about the other team is too fast, so we're going to go to man, and that means that you're close and covering a guy who's faster than you that you're overly concerned with their team speed, you're going to get destroyed.
If you're
always in chase in the defensive zone, you're dead. That's why, to me, playing zone is considerably more sound than chasing guys if speed's a concern. And even just chasing. You see the Jets, when they break down with things, when they lose their structure in their D zone, it looks like a circus and gong show with just ridiculous sequences of chasing back there.
The way it was explained to me is if you're covering an area, you're not on the guy. And if the guy has speed, he's gone. You're not going to get to him by the time he goes around you or he gets to the puck.
But
if you're on man and you have speed, the Jets have speed.
Yeah, I don't think it's a speed issue. It's just
no.
Not a speed issue, that nullifies what you're saying, Jim.
Maybe the most frustrating part of it is that you see some teams in their own end, and it's turnovers, right? Where they just maybe you don't have the skill on the back end, whatever it may be, and you know puck management is what kills them. That's almost never the case with the Jets. Like there'll be the odd blunder that kind of every team makes, but for the most part, it is that kind of just pure mass and utter confusion, and you'll have one or two guys left open that you're left thinking, well, why and how? And it was too often last year where that was the case with the team, where you'd have these massive blunders that weren't related to making mistakes with the puck. It was just a matter of, I guess, just kind of knowing what to do and where to be on the ice. Some of that's youth. A lot of that, though, wasn't necessarily youth related. Like there were a lot of issues
right.
with some of the elder statesmen on the team that a lack of experience doesn't necessarily explain away.
Well, and that's my point about it. To me, everything I've heard, that's the focus this year. And if that's the focus, and I don't think that it was as emphasized as it would be this year. I really don't. I'll hearken back to Nick Ehlers' comments there where I wasn't very good defensively in the first two periods and Maurice kept running me out there. I think they have more depth now. I think the leeway for that kind of stuff is over. And I think if you're not going to play that, I just think that it's the main focus this year, and the leeway for you to learn it is done.
And I'll say this. I've been saying this for a while, and I'll say it until things change. The lead individual in this search and journey to get better defensively sits with number 33. What kind of season is he going to have? His season alone will go a long way in defining how sound the Jets are defensively. Are they constantly going to be covering for him? Are you going to be looking at that Ehlers or pick your forward coming back on a 3-on-2 when you got a forward playing defense because Buff is caught up in the offensive zone? And how disciplined is he going to play? What's his approach going to be? What's ultimately his buy-in going to be at? That is a huge determining factor on how successful the Jets are this year.
And I don't personally put that much emphasis on just the one guy.
Well, you should.
I don't think I should. If he gets spectacularly, if he just plays better and the rest of the team doesn't, it's not going to change. It's like Trouba played better than we ever saw him play last year, and it didn't change. One guy isn't – I understand that what you're saying, and I agree that he needs to play better, and I think with less minutes he will. But I don't put that much emphasis on this team's future on one guy playing better. It's got to be a team thing.
The leadership role, everything that comes into play, obviously it needs to be a team thing, but there are lead dogs out there, man. There are guys where it starts that have more emphasis on it, and his level of discipline is critical.
When Big Buff's on, when he's really on, this team morphs into something special. There's no doubt about it. I think they can make the playoffs still with how Bufflin played last year. But if he – I just feel like when he elevates his game and when he plays physical, the entire Jets team plays a foot taller and 50 pounds heavier. And if they can add that to hopeful improvements elsewhere, they'll be fun as hell to watch. There's no doubt about it.
We've got to take a break, but our NHL news and notes will continue with more from Blake Wheeler's interview with Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun, and we'll touch on his captaincy and how he felt it went in his first year. That's next on The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Knott Auto Corp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Knott Auto Corp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and five buddies up from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win at TSN1290.ca. The Big Show with Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, Darren Bombing on the Labor Day Classic coming up at the top of the hour. This is NHL News and Notes on the Royal Sports Power Hour, and we're delving into the comments to Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun from Captain Blake Wheeler, your Winnipeg Jets. 1 year to the day he was named captain of the Jets, and I just tweeted out the article and pick up his son to read it. There's much more in there on his summer and his off season and his family now and when they came back to Winnipeg and his approach to this season. But we're going to focus on him being captain for a year now in his first year as a captain in the National Hockey League. Ken Wiebe asked what the most valuable lesson Wheeler learned from his first season, and he said, it's sometimes lonely. The things you want to say or the things you want to do, you've got to just bottle that up. That's not really in my personality to keep things inside or bottle it up, but that comes with maturity too. There are certain times and places to do certain things. There's times when you've got to build a guy up and might be struggling, and there's times when you've got to kick him in the rear when he's struggling. It's about knowing your guys, knowing the different relationships you have in the locker room. Overall, it's having an atmosphere where guys are excited to come to the rink and be around each other and work hard every day, because if you do that through an 82-game season, you're going to find yourself enjoying yourself and winning more hockey games than you lose.
That's impressive. But I think I'm mostly impressed in this piece by two dogs and three kids in his house. Holy smackers. Got a bit of a gong, a captain in the house maybe, or co-captain with the wife, and then everything that goes on here with the team. That whole reeling things in, and you know, that's a neat part of what he, and especially in dealing with the media maybe, right? Like dealing what he projects to the media, what he says, how careful he's got to be, and then things inside that room. And you wonder, with as much problem as people had with Stewie and Thorburn, they were two solid veteran rocks in there that could stand by him if there was a message, especially in maybe having to deal with a veteran or confront any situations like that where you want to get more out of somebody. You know, he's the veteran aspect, and maybe that's why you're talking about, you know, the possibility of Matt Hendricks, some people talking about that addition of leadership. But this room is switching to a younger sort of a group with the secondary leaders in Scheifele and Trouba and the likes of that. It's a neat blend in that room, mm-hmm. for sure.
Well, I've heard from two people that Matt Hendricks is going to come into a room, regardless of whether it's here or where he's playing for, and he's going to tell you what's up, whether he's been there a day or whether he's been there 3 years. And I think that's what Wheeler's touching on. Like, there's some times where he'd like to say something and it's better if he can't, but somebody like a Hendricks or a Thorburn or a Stewart could, despite your role on the team, there are just guys that with that experience can step into you and say something that maybe a captain shouldn't, because it might deteriorate a relationship.
Yeah, which is fair. I think in having an outside voice, a new one kind of coming in, I think can maybe give a greater impact than someone that's been there for a few years as well, if someone is off their line. But I don't think that should be the case, right? Like, it's been enough time, and even the young guys have been there now for a full year at least, if you're talking specifically rookies, that Wheeler shouldn't have to at this point. Like, he shouldn't have to say anything to get guys going in the right direction. The only kind of concern, I think, is what Troy touched on, where you have this age gap. You have kind of Wheeler, Little, Enstrom, Bufflin, and then this new core coming in. So, I mean, not that there is a disconnect, but that would be the only concern I'd have right now in the locker room, is just making sure that there's not some kind of communication gap between the older guys and the younger players on the team.
But, Troy, you would know this better than anybody, but in my experience, regardless of what level, no matter how good a season's going or how much you're winning, there's always points in the season where somebody has to say something to somebody.
Well, not all. And this is where I slip into a real old school mind frame as far as like falling in line and doing what you're supposed to do to give yourself the best opportunity to perform at a high level, where, you know, you're dealing with the new school and old school, and the new school coddle and come on now and appeal to some guy who is used like that. Much of that doesn't exist in me. And in the environment that I grew up around in sports, it was shut your freaking mouth or deal with some hefty consequences here, get in line or get the F out sort of thing. Like, I wonder how gentle things, I doubt they are very gentle, even with the whole nouveau way to approach things. So, and then when you look down the list of names here with Scheifele, Wheeler, Little, Perreault, Matthias, Lowry, Kopp, Laine, Armia, Ehlers, Dano, Tanev, Hendricks, Scarbosa, but like who exactly is straying away here that needs to be, there's no real problem child here, I wouldn't imagine. You know, like you'd hope, and in this day and age with the level of business, the seriousness, the money at stake, all the rest of it, I can't imagine there's a whole lot of, come on, man, we need this out here, we need that out here. You would hope that just doesn't exist at a very high level.
We got to take a break. We'll talk Labor Day Classic with Darren Bomme next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports, and every week TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday right here on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon. And we'd love to do so, including on tomorrow's Big Show, the Subway Sports Star of the Week, TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you on The Big Show on TSN 1290. We're going to talk some hockey once again with Jonathan Davis at the bottom of the hour. We'll take another qualifier, tee up the Boss Pizza fan line, which will be open at 9 o'clock today. But right now we're going to get back into the Labor Day Classic with our good friend from Minook Denture Blue Bomber Game Day and CFL 60 Monday nights right here on TSN 1290 at 6 p.m. Mr. Darren Bomme, how are you, sir?
My favorite trio of fellas in the morning. How's it going today?
Wow. I thought you were going to say on the station, then you narrowed it down to just the morning.
The only trio on the station.
Well, that's what I'm talking
about.
That's
even worse. Yeah, that more makes Jim's point, doesn't it?
Thanks.
Yeah.
You might say the only trio that's in this studio right now is your favorite. That's interesting. Good to hear from you, my man. We'll start with Weston Dressler. Lower body comes off the six-game IL to take on the Riders. What do you expect from him on Sunday in Regina?
I expect a lot of things because he looks his regular self. He's really been champing at the bit to get back into the lineup. You could tell because, you know, on the six-game injured list, you know, you're not allowed to practice until you've served, you know, four of the six games on that six-game injured list. But last week, you know, not allowed to be a participant at practice, but he's there. He's in cleats. He's in gloves. He's got his hat on backwards. He's, you know, running around and running with a lot of speed. And, you know, it's funny how involved he can still be in the preparation from week to week, despite not being a practice participant. Obviously, you know, the guys around the room, you know, starting to call him coach because he's right there with Paul Appelese, right there with Buck Pierce, you know, in implementing things and you know, in essentially in a coaching capacity. That's, you know, when you've been in the league for a decade, it's probably an easy transition to have to still be that mentally involved. But, it's a no-brainer to get Weston Dressler back in the lineup as soon as he could. I have an all indications and talking to Weston and talking to Mike O'Shea and, you know, the surprise that it was when he was placed on the 6-game injured list, that this was not a serious injury. He was probably ready to go in some capacity even a week or maybe 2 weeks ago, but wanted to make sure he was fully 100% and healthy because, you know, the CFL season, it's not a race, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. So, you know, with 10 games to go in the regular season and Winnipeg, of course, hoping to make some postseason noise, they wanted to make sure he was, you know, 100% and not having something nagging him for the rest of the year. I expect big things for him. You know, if you're ever going to be fired up for a game, wouldn't it be against your former team?
Does it look at this point in time where a lot of people were wondering or wanting for the Flanders, Harris, both options in the backfield, on the field at the same time sort of thing that came to fruition a few games ago? Does it look like that's going to be sort of a stick-and-stay thing for the rest of the season?
I think so. It sure looks that way, and I think, you know, it's a no-brainer as well. It's a tough decision. You know, TJ Thorpe has brought a lot to the field. I love his physicality. You know, he's been pretty sticky as far as catching everything thrown his way. You know, had the fumble caused by Kyrie Hebert, but I don't know if there's a more hellacious hitter at the point of contact in the CFL, you know, next to Kyrie Hebert. Maybe Solomon Elamimian, maybe, you know, one or two other guys in that conversation. So I'm not going to hang too much on TJ Thorpe and the fumble, you know, against the Montreal Alouettes. But just the versatility, the dynamic that is brought when you have a two tailback set, you know, different looks, different blocking schemes, different zone blocking, different running plays that allows Paul Lapolis to call, both with Timothy Flanders getting his hands on the ball and Andrew Harris getting his hands on the ball. Both of these running backs can also be used extremely easily and fluidly as a receiver. Put one into the slot back position. It can be number 20. It can be number 33. It doesn't seem to matter. Both of these guys can be a receiver traditionally, and both of these players can be a running back traditionally. And to just have that versatility, those different looks, especially in the hurry-up offense, they call it the cheetah, to be able to use those guys, you know, in the run game, in the pass game, and in particular in a hurry-up, it can really give opposing defenses headaches as far as personnel and matchups. So I expect this to be a normal thing. It's funny, fans were clamoring for the Thunder and Lightning, the two tailback set, for, you know, pretty much 24 months now. They've been clamoring for it since we saw, you know, got our first taste of Timothy Flanders early last season when Andrew Harris was down to injury. Now that we've seen what they can do together, and Paul Lapolis has seen all of the, you know, options at his disposal, I expect it to be a norm in this Blue Bombers offense moving forward.
The cheetah is a great name for a hurry-up offense.
I love it.
Darren, I was going to say bomber, but I said bombing. But Darren, with Matt Nichols and Andrew Harris and Mo Leggett being named top performers for the month of August and the 7-2 record, this is relatively new territory for this organization. Not that complacency or arrogance would set in, but I'm wondering what the atmosphere is around the team, because they are having a lot of success at the midway point.
Yeah, you know, you ask those players about those individual accolades. It could be top performer of the week. It could be like the three of them sweeping top performer of the month honors for the month of August in weeks 7 through 10, where, of course, the Blue Bombers won all of their games, have that 5-game winning streak. But they stay on message. They stay very even keel as far as, you know, it being, you know, those individual honors being team honors. You know, always attributing their individual successes to their teammates. And that's the reason they've been able to be effective and been able to win games. And, you know, this isn't a team that has anybody too flashy. You know, maybe Andrew Harris. Maybe the play of TJ Heath earlier this season with all the interceptions he was able to compile, but not a lot of flash on this team. They rely on each other. They play just fundamentally sound football, and that's why they're able to eke out wins. You know, back against the wall, Mike O'Shea says, you know, he looks at his sideline after a game. They'll be trailing by a score, maybe even two scores, and he sees belief in his eyes of his players because they know they will win, and it's more of a question of just how. That's what Mike O'Shea says, what he sees from his team, you know, on the sidelines during games. Ultimately, though, you know, these individual honors, I think, is just an indication that people are starting to recognize the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Objectively, it's beyond fair to say this Blue Bombers team has arrived. They are for real, and they are competitors hoping to make noise in the CFL. They can beat any team right now. The final stretch of the season, I've told you guys before, you know, keep winning games, keep piling up those points and those W's mid-season right now. Begin to beat those Western opponents. That final month of the season, when you have BC twice and Calgary in week 20, that's what's going to determine the difference between first, second, and third place in the West and first, second, and third place in the CFL. The difference between going on the road and playing a tough playoff game away from home and hosting a playoff game for the first time in the history of Investors Group Field.
DB, coming off of last season and 5-13 and Chris Jones getting into all kinds of trouble and apparently on a short leash, just a degree under boiling more or less in Saskatchewan all this offseason, then stumbling out of the gate here. It looked like Labor Day and Banjo Bowl were going to be a couple of fairly easy wins for the lofty notion of what the Bombers might accomplish this year, but holy smackers, have the Rough Riders ever turned that corner? And as Dunnigan and Stiegel said, I think most people would probably agree to see Calgary, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan maybe as the top three teams in the CFL right now. They are a surging, dangerous team.
Absolutely. Winners of three of their last four and convincing wins. The one loss coming you know, on the road in BC, where it just seemed like Travis Lule was playing some of his best football of the season, which is saying something, you know, for the former MOP. But those three wins in their last four games, the last two coming in extremely convincing fashion, pummeling the BC Lions at Mosaic, going into Edmonton last week and beating a team in front of 40,000 Eskimo fans was so impressive. For just the way they did it, they scored on special teams. They scored on defense. They continue to put up a lot of points with Kevin Glenn and this the offense the way it's clicking right now. Quick release offense, getting the ball into their playmakers' hands very quickly, running the ball with a lot of power with Greg Morris and in particular Cam Marshall. They've been very impressive. The way the defense has stepped up the last couple weeks, Ed Gainey with the four interception game and a fumble recovery 2 weeks ago, last week in intercepting Mike Riley on consecutive drives and bringing both back for touchdowns, everything is working well in Saskatchewan right now. You talk about that Chris Jones and a lot of people, you know, doubting him in the weeks and months prior. It was very similar to the criticisms that Mike O'Shea got here in Winnipeg early last season following their 1-4 start. When they made the investments in Chris Jones, you know, you can criticize his personality, you can criticize his approach to the game of football and just his personality for what it is, as polarizing as it is. They knew they were going to stick it out with Chris Jones, and we're starting to see the fruits of that. This Saskatchewan team is playing with a lot of confidence. They believe in themselves right now. These Labor Day and Banjo Bowl back-to-backs are going to be great matchups because both of these teams are maybe the two hottest teams in the CFL right now. Anybody can win these games, and I think the odds makers have made that clear. This game opened up as a pick'em in the Labor Day Classic. Saskatchewan is now favored to win this game over a team in Winnipeg that's 7-2 and has won their five last games.
Midway point of the season, it's going to be a great game, but who do you think is coach of the year so far at the midway point?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. You know, I would probably put Jason Moss atop that conversation right now. Yes, of course, Edmonton's lost their last two games, but just getting the most he has out of a roster that is so depleted, so injury, so banged up. I would probably put him at the top of that list. I would probably include Mike O'Shea. The over-under on wins this year, via Bodog, was 8. The Bombers are 7-2. I would probably put Mike O'Shea into that conversation. And if Chris Jones can continue to get, you know, the performances out of his team, you know, the most out of his quarterback in Kevin Glenn and his defense, like we've seen over the last 2 or 3 weeks in Saskatchewan, I would say those three teams, those three head coaches are probably atop it right now. But I got to give the edge right now to Jason Moss to be 7-2, to not have his general manager, you know, presence because of the dismissal of Ed Hervey so late in the offseason. I would probably give Jason Moss the edge right now. We'll see how the rest of the season goes. But through 10 weeks, I got to give it to the Edmonton Eskimos.
Great stuff as always, Darren. We'll look for you or listen for you and Westy and Chris Walby on the Minook Denture Blue Bomber game day Sunday afternoon.
Yes, Sunday, 1 o'clock. We'll see you then. Talk soon, guys.
Thanks, DB. Take care, bro.
Awesome. Thanks, Darren. We'll take a break and get our next qualifier on the Big Show. TSN 1290 next.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through at 780-1290 as TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're taking our second qualifier. And if it's you, you could be one of the lucky five listeners and their guests that we send to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights on Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll give you two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay. Maybe go see a show. Of course, we told you about Santana at the House of Blues, Backstreet Boys at the Axis, Inside Planet Hollywood. Celine Dion is performing at Caesars Palace those days as well. David Copperfield's at the MGM Grand Resort and Casino. Carrot Top is at the Luxor Hotel and Casino. Penn and Teller at the Rio. All staples in Vegas. Magic Mike live at the Hard Rock Cafe and Casino.
I don't think you could. You'd have to pay me a couple hun to go see a couple Benjamin Franklins to go see Carrot Top.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste. Like there's some of the stuff I like
means
in other times.
Early on, no, I've never understood that.
There's some things I don't mind about them, and there's other things that I don't care for. Not that I dislike it. It's like, just that I don't find funny. But other things I do find funny.
And whatever he's done to himself, right, aesthetically, over the last little bit, has turned him
into his eyebrows.
Like, you're going to have nightmares of Carrot Top because of the visual thing going on. I don't know what all the work that he's done and all the rest of it is just kind of crazy looking.
He is ripped, though. Like, he.
Sure.
He's kind of like Axl Rose. He's the comedian Axl Rose. His face and his. Axl Rose got pec implants, I heard, and everything.
No.
Yes, he did. Yeah. I know that for a fact, actually.
TMZ here. Really?
Yeah.
Well, that makes no sense because it looks like he's got a bit of a boiler. I mean, for Pete's sake.
Well, he's got a paunch, like a gut.
Yeah, you can't. What are you doing getting pec implants if you got a bit of a
belly?
Take
care of business down there.
A couple years ago.
There's nothing more important than abs. If you don't have abs, nothing else matters.
I just feel awful about myself right now.
Go in the kitchen, Mr. Rose. Forget the pec implants. Get those abs in your kitchen.
As you say, abs are made in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Interesting. Also, there is one of seven Cirque du Soleil shows on the Las Vegas Strip. You can also think about going to the Grand Canyon, Lake Mead, the Hoover Dam. A round of Top Golf at the MGM Grand. That would be interesting, of course. So lots to get to. Zipline along Slotzilla on Fremont Street.
Nice. The outdoor stuff at Vegas is really under. I don't. Maybe most people when they go down there aren't really in the condition for things of activity, right?
Yeah, you just got to really keep things. Things are rough enough on the ground. I'm not going up in the air.
I just want to sit in this chair and watch something.
You might zip line along at 3 a.m. like Chow did in The Hangover 3, I believe. But to get up in the morning and say, "Let's go zip lining,"
come on, fellas, that would be going with me.
I don't know about
come on,
that.
Yeah. Fellas, let's go.
Please stop screaming.
Who's our latest qualifier?
It is Cody Welpton.
Cody Welpton, congratulations. Just for qualifying, you, my friend, have a Jets Gear gift card, and you are now entered for one of five grand prize draws, which will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, September 11th, 25th, October 9th, 23rd, and November 6th. You can also listen for other chances to qualify if you haven't already and win weekdays with us here on The Big Show, 7:15, 8:15, with Kevin Olszewski and the Don Vito Roundtable at 12:15, and with Hustler and Rick Ralph on The Afternoon Ride at 5:15. You can also get more info at tsn1290.ca and watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Hockey nights in Vegas. Go all in with TSN 1290.
And Welpy, if you win, I'm waking you up at 8 in the morning Saturday after the game. We're going ziplining, baby.
Zipline. Don't be that guy. Let's go. Nobody wants
hey,
that
Cal
guy.
Cal Murphy used to always say, Westwood, you want to fly with the buzzards at night? You got to soar with the eagles in the morning.
Frank used to say that back home. Frank the Tank used to say. He'd literally, like, if it had to rake leaves or shovel snow or cut the lawn, it was Saturday mornings at 7:30 or 8 a.m. And I'm like, I have all day. And he's like, you want to be a big boy at night? You got to be a big boy in the morning. And I'm like, why? I'm literally going to do it and then go back to bed an hour and a half from now because it makes you a man. Sorry, that's a bad impersonation of my father. If he's listening right now, he's on his way.
That's what freaked people out, because your dad's real name is Frank, and you sound like Frank Costanza a little bit when you talk. Like, the whole...
People ask me that all the time. He does sound like...
Really?
Yeah. And I've had friends say, like, my parents are great people. All my friends love my parents. But I'll go home, and it's like the Costanza.
It was Frank Costanza, right?
It's like, yeah. It's like, Jimmy, you want some more ham? And I'm like, no, thanks. I'm good, Dad. He's like, come on. Have some more ham. And my mom will say, like... He doesn't want any more ham. Can I offer my boy some ham? And it's like, people, please. I'm here for four more days.
Oh.
Who doesn't like ham? Anyways, we're off topic here. Way off topic. Congratulations to Cody and Mel earlier today, our two qualifiers. We'll continue to do so throughout the day today and weekdays here on The Big Show. Looking forward to it. More information at TSN 1290. Hockey Talk with Jonathan Davis next on The Big Show. TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Watch it. The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the perfect four menu to customize your listening experience. Your music, your station's always free on the iHeartRadio app. The Big Show, TSN 1290. We're going to talk some hockey up next, but we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line, get your thoughts on Johnny Manziel not being physically fit or mental testing well with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and they will not be signing him. This as of last week. The Labor Day Classic, of course, we'll get your thoughts on that. Bombers returned to the practice field yesterday. Lots to talk about around there, and Weston Dressler being back, and just who you think might win the Labor Day Classic. We'll start taking your predictions. Ken Weeb's article with Captain Blake Wheeler saying this has got to be the year. It just has to be. We'll get your thoughts on that on the Boss Pizza fan line as well. And Aaron Rodgers has come out and said some stuff about Colin Kaepernick after LeSean McCoy said some stuff last week. We'll delve into that prior to opening the Boss Pizza fan line as well.
Maybe the coolest part of what Wheeler's statement is there is that mentality is different probably than every other year that he's come and arrived at training camp and maybe everyone else in the locker room. And what has really haunted Jets a lot has been October, November, some of the doldrums of the season, that when you come in game one, in that mentality, you really wonder the impact of that for the early parts of the season.
After an informal skate at Bell MTS Iceplex yesterday, Blake Wheeler told Ken Weeb of the Winnipeg Sun, it's got to be this year. It just has to be. It's been a lot of the same thing. We have enough talent. There's no reason why we can't push this to the next level this year. So it's going to be about getting this group together and figuring out how we've got to play to win hockey games. So we'll talk about that much more with our good friend Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you guys today?
We're doing well, thank you. We'll just start there with Blake Wheeler's comments and basically the Jets, year seven and the talent and the changes they made. Do they get in the playoffs this year, do you think, in the tough West?
Wow. Well, you know, I was thinking about this last night, is trying to think about the things we were going to talk about today, and I think when you look at Winnipeg's situation, look, I agree with Blake Wheeler's comments. This has to be the year. But I think when you look at it realistically, you have to say, okay, what's this team going to do differently? They got to stay out of the box. They've got to make their life. They got to make life easier for their goalie, especially whether it's going to be Steve Mason or Connor Hellebuck. Because guys, I think at best they've got the fifth best goalie in this division. And I just, it's going to make life really tough and challenging to make a playoff spot.
That's one hell of a point. shut up. And that's the first time that someone has said that regarding the goaltending situation. And I suppose that's a very interesting and sort of a scary point to make, is comparing the Steve Mason and the where he'll likely fit in to the others in the Central. That's something we're going to have to look into as we go along here. JD, your thoughts a little bit. You spent a lot of time immersed in the Pacific specifically, and of course, therefore, Shane Doan and the Coyotes and some of the struggles that that organization and team endured along with its captain. Your thoughts on his career?
Well, a great career, and a dinosaur in the sense that not just age-wise, guys, but I mean a dinosaur in the fact that he stuck that long with one team, and it was remarkable. It was remarkable to see, and I was just always a big fan of Shane Doan, and I just when you have a chance to sit and talk to this guy, and you get a sense of one, his appreciation of the game, but I mean he seemed to be a coach and general manager while he was playing. I'll never forget a conversation I had with him back in 2012 when the Kings and Coyotes were playing each other in the playoffs, and we were asking Doan about the defense on the Kings, and he not only could talk about what LA had on the ice in Los Angeles, but he was dissecting their minor league system, and I was my eyes just kind of like, where does this guy have all this information? He was just a real student of the game. He'll be missed, but definitely want to celebrate his career.
And along those lines, Jonathan, we're not knocking Shane Doan at all, but the topic of him and Hall of Fame came up yesterday, and we were all in agreement that not a Hall of Famer just because of the points, but some people were arguing with Clark Gillies and those guys. Do you think Shane Doan is a Hall of Famer?
I think he's a Hall of a really good player, and when it comes to character, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. But I think on the ice, no, and that's no knock on Shane Doan, but I just don't put him in that elite category when you start separating, great from very good. And Shane Doan was good or very good, but he wasn't great. So I would say no.
We here in Winnipeg, I think it's important five teams from the Central make it into the playoffs to give the Jets, of course, a better chance to get in. So with that, the teams outside the top three in the Pacific need to struggle mightily. And I'll ask you about Los Angeles right out of the gate. I asked this yesterday, but is there more opportunity here for Los Angeles to improve, or are they headed down towards the bottom again of the Pacific?
I don't necessarily think that they're headed down towards the bottom, but they're not better than Edmonton right now. They're not better than Anaheim right now. You could argue that Calgary is still maybe better than Los Angeles. I mean, look, the Kings to me are a team that's going to be fighting for a wild card spot and not one of the top three spots. They should be better this year. I mean, I don't see Anze Kopitar having another season like he did last year. Tyler Toffoli was a guy that played on virtually one leg last year. So I think that, you can get probably, realistically, you can get 20 more goals combined out of Toffoli and Kopitar. And then you've got a healthy Jonathan Quick. And I think that can buy you, four or five more wins than what they had last year. And then having a different voice behind the bench, in John Stevens as the head coach and not just the assistant, as opposed to Daryl Sutter. So, look, I think they will be better. I think it's a team that's around that 95, 96 point number. So I think that they're fighting for a wild card spot, but they're not realistically right now one of the top three in the Pacific.
Number of factors going into Anze Kopitar and sort of his production, but can he get back to the elite level he was once at?
Well, I think so. And look, you know, for a good part of last year, you know, his line mates were Dwight King, who's now in the KHL, and Trevor Lewis, who's a very, you know, a solid player, a guy that can move up and down your lineup, but not a guy that should be playing on your top line for any extended period of time. So hopefully, you know, this year he's penciled to play with Mike Camilleri. We'll see how that goes. And at least for the start of the season, Dustin Brown, who, you know, while Dustin Brown may not have lived, has not lived up to the numbers that he's being paid, still had, I thought, a very productive season last year. So I don't see any reason why Anze Kopitar, you know, cannot return to that elite level. And then when Marian Gaborik gets healthy, the idea is to play Gaborik, Kopitar, and Camilleri. And while that may not scare the daylights out of a lot of teams around the league, it's definitely a step up from what LA had last year playing on Kopitar's flanks.
Jonathan, Dallas with 109 points in the 15-16 season, last year 79. How much improvement are you expecting out of the Hitchcock-led Stars this year?
Well, they're definitely going to be better. You've got, you know, with the additions of Radulov and Hanzel, and then Mark Methot and Ben Bishop, you know, on the back end, it should be a better team, no question about it. And I think, look, I'm very interested to see what the impact that Mark Methot has on a guy like John Klingberg, because I think it can be very similar, you know, to what the impact that Mark Methot had on Erik Karlsson. If you look back especially to Erik Karlsson's, the year that he finished second to Drew Doughty in the Norris Trophy vote, his numbers went up significantly when Methot returned from injury. And I just think that Methot can provide a steadying influence back there. To me, you know, look, Ken Hitchcock will make this team better defensively. And also, hey, let's not forget, you know, they should have a healthier Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. But Ken Hitchcock was a guy that sucked the life out of the players in St. Louis last year, and especially what he did to Jake Allen. So what you need when you've got a Ken Hitchcock coach team is that you've got to have some really good layers, whether it's his assistants or the veterans in that locker room. So that's going to be just as an important role as what Hitch can do to change the style of play in Dallas. But they should be a better team.
Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey joining us on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290, 42 minutes past the hour. Can the Minnesota Wild keep up the pace they had last year? I know they scored the most goals and everything that went along with that, but a lot of it is success at the first half of the season. How sustainable is the style they play and the goals they score?
Well, I think, you know, the style of play can be sustainable. I mean, it's just a team that, you know, look, the big problem they had, you know, come the playoffs was being able to finish. And, you know, leadership to me is still a question inside that locker room. Matt Cohen, you know, comes to Minnesota, definitely will provide a lot of leadership on that team. But, you know, I just don't know who the go-to guy is on that team. And that's, you know, they're a team right now, to me, that is built better for 82 games than a team that's built to make, you know, a long run in the playoffs. And Bruce Boudreau, you know, hey, it was a great year, and we all love, I don't know, I think we all love Gabby. I mean, one of the best characters and best people to talk to around the league. But, you know, he needs to get over that hump as well. And I'm not in that room. I don't get a chance to be around that team day in and day out. But, you know, look, the one knock on Bruce has always been, come playoff time, you know, he tends to tighten up a little. And I'm not sure if that was the case last year. You know, they ran into an extremely hot goaltender in Jake Allen. And that, you know, hey, look, I think they only gave up, what, 11 or 12 goals in that series. So you can't blame Bruce for that. You know, if your team can't score, I just think Minnesota is a team that just needs to, they just don't have the finishers on that team. So they can make a great regular season run. I just don't think they're built for a long playoff run.
JD, are you picking the Golden Knights to finish last in the Pacific?
No, I'm not necessarily picking them last as long as Colorado's still out there. I mean, you know, I just look at what's going on in Colorado, and nothing's really gone on. You know, no significant additions. I'm not, you know, Neil Yakupov is not a guy that's going to turn your organization around. They've still got the Matt Duchene mess there. So, you know, this is a team that, what, finished with 48 points, the fewest in the salary cap era. The one thing that the Vegas Golden Knights have going for them is that they've got themselves, you know, a solid defense, and they've got themselves a really good goalie in Marc-Andre Fleury, and then, you know, you've got Calvin Pickard and J.F. Berube there. So, hey, look, they're going to have to try to win games 2-1. So, look, I just, as long as, you know, with everything that's going on in Colorado and the fact that you're still, right now, we still have all the lingering questions about what's going to happen with Matt Duchene, it definitely keeps the Golden Knights' chances alive of not finishing dead last.
Jonathan, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this and enjoy your weekend.
With pleasure. Have a great Labor Day weekend, guys.
Thanks so much, JD. Take care, man. Hey, if you're the Golden Knights, and if your fan base really don't have any expectations too much, so long as you can be competitive, somewhat competitive and entertaining, you want to finish last.
Of course you do.
Right?
Of course you do.
Well,
play entertaining hockey.
You want
lose
to have the
6-4
best chance.
Type thing like that. That would be the best thing. I know you don't like to hear it.
I mean, you got screwed around last year with the lottery.
But and you know, maybe more so. Well, I guess technically you did, but you'd rather win this year's lottery than last year's.
Yeah.
When you got guys like Rasmus Dahlin coming in and the Andrei Svechnikov, the Russian kid. Those are projected to be high end franchise players. So I don't know. Well, this would be the year to tank as opposed to last year, in my opinion.
Cody Glass, I mean, it's clear to me they're going to build through the draft. Like, this whole idea of signing some guys and all this stuff, I just don't see them being very good this year. So I don't think they tank, but I just don't think – but you bring up the grad – I mean, Gary Lawless made that point with you and Huss when you were on the afternoon ride that, as he said, he goes, I believe you need a top three franchise player to build a team in the National Hockey League. And the way you do that, like the Chicago's, like the Pittsburgh's, like the – is you get a lottery pick.
I love Jonathan's point to figure out where – just assuming Steve Mason's the starting goalie here, and you have to rank the goaltenders in the Central, where does Mason fit?
Well, sure, but then we get back to my discussion of let's rank the forwards in the division.
That's a different discussion, JT.
Yeah,
Steve Mason is coming here mostly as almost a messiah, right? Higher goal, better goaltending. That's what the Jets need, no question about it. And you're going to talking about catapulting over other teams. So just it's interesting if you've got the fourth or fifth best goalie in the division, what exactly are you expecting to accomplish?
But this goes back to our earlier discussion of Matt Nichols being the sixth rated quarterback in the league. Or if you're the fifth best goalie in the division, it doesn't mean you're a bad goalie. It just means there's some really good goalies. It's like Matt Nichols. Just because you were the fourth or fifth ranked quarterback in the league doesn't mean you're a bad quarterback. It just means there's Mike Riley and Bo Levi Mitchell. There's some exceptional quarterbacks.
It means there's X number of goalies or quarterbacks in front of you, Jim, who you're trying to be better than to give yourself a better positioning within the division. It does matter. And the whole thing you're talking about is there's a relativity to what you're saying that confounds me.
Well, what's confounding about it?
He's not as good as Dubnyk.
He's not as good as Corey Crawford. But it doesn't mean he's not good enough.
No. Well, it means that it makes it that much more difficult to get above those teams into a playoff spot if indeed there's only four in the Central.
Fair enough. So then you have the fifth-ranked goalie that's not a bad goalie. He's just not as good as the other four. Then you go to the forwards, and then you go to the defense.
Uh-huh.
And is the goaltending good enough if you have better forwards in the division and you have a better defense depth core than the division? Can the better goaltending, although it's the fifth in the division, combined with everything else being better than some of the other teams, get you in the playoffs?
Yeah, and I would look at a team like Calgary, for example, to make your point. Where would you rank Mike Smith in the Pacific?
Yeah.
He's at best fourth or fifth. But I'm not really hesitating on Calgary to miss the playoffs because the other pieces that they have there are pretty good. I think the Jets can overcome Mason being wherever you want to rank him in the Central because I still think he's a hell of a goalie. There's just a lot of good goalies in the Central. You look at the Metro as well.
Point.
The Metro is littered with Vezina candidates. So you could have the fifth best goalie and still have a really solid tender back there.
It isn't hard to imagine a scenario where the best three goalies in the Central, no question about it, would be some mix, pick them in the spots you want. Crawford, Dubnyk, and Bishop, I dare say. So it isn't hard to envision a Central where those three teams are sitting on top and there's a bunch of vying underneath that. I'm just saying, if you're talking about the likes of a Dubnyk who has played at a remarkable, what a guy like Bishop is capable of, and possibly Crawford, if those guys have solid seasons, it makes it difficult to get and wiggle in front of them come playoff time, or set for the playoff line.
We have to break, but we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim, Troy, and Brandon and the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Kevin Glenn says the Riders, without a doubt, have the loudest fans in the CFL. And he said, I know I don't want to offend anybody in Winnipeg because I played there, but even if I was a Blue Bomber, I'd probably lie and say they did. But in reality, Rider fans are louder than Bomber fans. What's your thoughts on that? 780-1290. Johnny Manziel, not in physical or mental shape or gave off enough red flags to not get offered a contract by the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And of course, Blake Wheeler's comments on this has got to be the year. It just has to be for the Jets making the playoffs in his comments in an article from the Winnipeg Sun's Ken Weeb. All that on the Boston Pizza fan line. But gentlemen, we're short on time, so I just wanted to tee this up. Green Bay Packers Aaron Rodgers said fellow quarterback Colin Kaepernick should be on an NFL roster heading into the 2017 regular season, but thinks the former 49ers starter's decision to kneel during the national anthem last year has prevented him from signing a new contract. He stated it would be ignorant to believe Kaepernick's extended stay in the free agent market wasn't impacted by his protest, which generated national headlines. I think he should be on a roster right now. I think because of the protests, he's not. This comes on the heels of LeSean McCoy, the running back for the Buffalo Sabres, last week saying basically that Kaepernick's got not good enough as a football player to make it worth NFL teams having to deal with the chaos he would bring. Quote, it's a lot more than just he's not on a team because he doesn't want to stand for the national anthem. That may have something to do with it, but I think also it has a lot to do with his play. I'm sure a lot of teams wouldn't want him as their starting quarterback. That chaos that comes along with it, it's a lot. As a team trying to win and not have a distraction on the team, I just take that as a player. There's certain players that could be on a team with distractions. Some other players are not good enough, or it's not worth it. I think his situation is not good enough to have him on the team with all the attention that comes with it. I'm sure a guy like Tom Brady or a guy like Odell Beckham, a guy like that, you deal with the attention and play with him. McCoy added that players could perhaps choose a better platform to state their beliefs.
And I just, that's ridiculous. Look, McCoy's statement, I think, is just ridiculous at this point in time. You've got a remarkable number of players that sort of on the same way you have coaching trees, you have these players under the tree of Kaepernick's protest doing the same thing right now, and it's just nowhere near receiving the same sort of media attention. There's been 34 quarterbacks signed without Colin Kaepernick getting signed here. What Aaron Rodgers said is bang on and wonderful for a player of his magnitude to come out and say it.
Your thoughts on that and everything else we discussed, Wheeler's comments, Kevin Glenn's comments, and the Labor Day Classic, rather, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 next.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca. Are we back on?
Yeah, we're definitely on now.
We are back. on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Wester, Brandon Rewicki with you. You can text us with standard message rates applying at 1290-90, or you can give us a call on the Boss Pizza fan line, anything and everything, 780-1290. We're talking about Kevin Glenn saying the Riders have the loudest fans in the CFL. No signing of Johnny Manziel after so many red flags in a workout the Tiger Cats gave him last week. Blake Wheeler telling Ken Wiebe, the Winnipeg Sun, that it has to be this year for them to make the playoffs. And, of course, Aaron Rodgers talking about Colin Kaepernick and LeSean McCoy. Anything and everything. 780-1290. Andrew, you are kicking us off today on The Big Show. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Just wanted to talk a little bit about this Kaepernick thing. I find it unfortunate for him that in a, you know, in a country that boasts the freedom of expression and, you know, freedom of speech and freedom to protest, clearly there isn't that freedom because it's, you know, it's significantly impacting this man's career and his future. Instead of you know, getting a pat on the back, you know, this guy's getting getting put on the sidelines and may not have a future in the NFL anymore. I've heard some people say that maybe, you know, protests should be left for, you know, other venues. I think you guys have quoted a guy in the paper to say that. You know, leave the politics for other things, but fact is, every time you play the national anthem, that is a political statement. Every time you play the anthem, it's a protest. You're standing, and it's not a protest in a negative way, but you're protesting a positive thing, that you're standing for the country that you live in and you believe in and everything else. And clearly Kaepernick is wanting to make a statement that he feels very strongly about and should be able to, without the business side, the owners now saying, you know, we need to nip this in the bud because we need to prevent this in the future. I think they're more worried that it's going to affect the bottom line than they are, you know, anything else. I find that really unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't know about the anthem being a political statement. I understand that there's some people that think anthems at sporting events should go away, and I just think that's paying respect to the country that the team or the game is being played in. I don't know if it's political. I just think it's acknowledging the fact of, like, when you go to the Olympics and they're held in China and you're from the U.S. and you win a gold medal and they play your anthem because that's who you're representing. I just think it's representative of the league and the country in which the game is being played.
It is interesting that that's basically the only time you ever hear anthems is sports related and, mm-hmm. and that whole thing. But, and to me, I think part of what Andrew was just saying there, like, the fact of the matter for me is that now you have multiple players, dozens. You think about the 12 guys taking a knee in Cleveland and players right across the league, white and black now, basically showing similar type of protest, taking similar measures here, and there's hardly a whisper about it. Like, the reaction is so different now. Colin Kaepernick getting signed to start to play right now, and he's already said he's not going to kneel. So if he doesn't do that, how is that going to be some sort of a distraction at this point in time when you have players throughout the league doing it? It doesn't make sense whatsoever. They have made an example of him, and you wonder if any point in time, and for Aaron Rodgers to come out and basically say, yeah, he's being blackballed, it's somewhere down history, whether it's a year from now, it's already happening maybe, or 5 years, what Colin Kaepernick did, and especially when you look at the state of a lot of things, racial and all the rest of it in the state, somewhere down the road, it is going to be held in super high regard, as it should.
And Muhammad, what Kaepernick is doing is not, I think, comparable necessarily to the magnitude of what Muhammad Ali did. What Ali did was something entirely different. But at the time, Ali was reviled for his decision.
Yes.
It's not like in the moment people were saying, what a brave man, this is the right thing to do, way to take it. He was absolutely slaughtered for it. And it took decades before he finally got the recognition that he now gets today.
And Wicks, it's really important to make the distinction of what color the skin is of people that were disgusted with the act of Muhammad Ali along with the act of Colin Kaepernick. By and large, the vast majority have white skin.
As for the other players kneeling, though, it's never going to have the magnitude as the initial thing that Kaepernick did. Like, it's not getting the media attention, it's not getting the play because it's in support of what Kaepernick did. It's not the original. Like, when Kaepernick did it, it wasn't because Kaepernick did it. It was because of what he was doing that made it national news. Now that it's happening and there's more and more players supporting it, it's not going to be as big of a story as when it initially happened.
And that's always like that. But yeah. The point to that is, if Colin Kaepernick gets signed now, that with McCoy coming out saying, it's going to be such a massive distraction, and for any organization saying it's the distraction, is it worth bringing him in here? That's a bunch of crap. What distraction? Now you got Colin Kaepernick coming in when the similar type of protests are happening, and you have like the list of 34 quarterbacks that have been signed. That is an absolute crime for him to be standing outside looking in still.
I think there's validity to it's going to be a distraction. It's if Colin Kaepernick's on the team and he's not even starting, how many reporters daily are going to want to talk to him?
If he's not kneeling,
everyone, and they're not going to want to talk.
If he's not kneeling, why would they be? Why would they keep talking to him?
Because it's a story, and they can interview him.
What's
and it's
a story?
Him. He's the story.
Really?
Yeah. If he got
by
signed,
what, his acts of charity at this point in time. What are you going to talk to him about?
If he got signed today,
it would be a big
and you're
story
covering,
today.
And you're covering that team.
Yeah, today it's a big story, Jim.
If the Patriots signed him today,
yeah,
a week from now, when the season's about to start and there's a game on Sunday, what do you think they're going to go to Tom Brady about?
You tell me.
They're going to go to Tom Brady and go, what if Kaepernick kneels on Sunday? Do you support that?
The answer is, he's already said he's not going to kneel. Well, next question.
We want to talk to Kaepernick.
Go ahead.
Exactly.
What's the question?
Well that's
what's
just
the question? He's not kneeling.
Troy.
And the fact of the matter is, Jim, a bunch of other players are kneeling.
So he gets signed today, and tomorrow nobody asks him about it anymore for the rest of the season?
We should replay the tape to see how ridiculous it is that you're saying to me that. Because I just said to you, it is going to be a story the day he signs. And after that, what's the story?
And I'm telling you, a month from now, it's going to be a story.
Oh, horse crap. If he comes out and says, I'm not kneeling, and if there's a game that goes by, he's not kneeling.
You've never been
a
journalist, so you don't know, but that's what I'm going to ask him.
I've been around journalists for 18 years at a level, getting asked questions, watching the way. I've been there with you. So I know the way it works. There's gonna be a fury early on, and if he's not kneeling, it dwindles, just as the reaction of the media right now is hardly a damn thing with all the other guys taking knees across the league. It will dwindle in a hurry.
And when they do kneel, did they not? Is it not reported?
Hardly, not at the same fervor of not the same disgust of last year and all the reaction of it. It's hardly even talked about.
We got to get to more calls, but I'm just saying I agree with McCoy saying that it would be a distraction away from football signing Colin Kaepernick.
I just think it's disingenuous when players who have arrest records and things like that are brought in. And they'll point to, well, it's the talent on the field. It's the exact same situation as Colin Kaepernick, where a bunch of the, like, for Greg Hardy to get signed by the Cowboys, like, for him to be a target from teams for some of the vile crimes that he committed, and Colin Kaepernick for doing a peaceful protest.
It that much more emphasizes, Wicks, that this is racial. You've got X number of white owners, and you got a black player going out there, I'm taking this stand, and the reaction of the mostly white NFL fan that was appalled with it, like that. This is why it's so racial, right? Because you had a black athlete making a statement when you're supposed to keep your mouth shut, especially if your skin is black in white America.
I think it's more money. I think it's more of a money issue.
That is crazy.
Teams don't want to offend their sponsors. Teams don't want anybody who pays the team or buys a ticket buy a ticket or to not sponsor the team. And if a guy's kneeling for the flag, there's a lot of people that don't put up with that.
What sponsor came out and dropped sponsorship because of Colin Kaepernick? Is there a single one? And again, Jim, there's other guys kneeling. It's not a story, hardly. And he's already come out and said he's not going to kneel anymore.
Okay, well, I just agree with LeSean McCoy, and I also agree that if he was Tom Brady, he'd be playing right now. It's the distraction that
you
comes
mean if
along
his skin
with
was white?
It. No, I don't mean that. Terry, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. Yesterday in your afternoon drive, there was an interesting study, sobering study, from a Dr. Manuzzi out of McMaster regarding study of CFL players and concussions.
Yeah, it was in the Star, and it's on thestar.com right now.
Yeah, so to me, it was when I read that, this is kind of interesting, is that usually it's after the fact, after the player passes on, they do this. But for the listeners, I'll just try to keep it real brief. They study a total of 40
people, 20 of which were retired living CFL athletes, and the findings were just sobering. They found that the cerebral cortex, essentially it's the surrounding of the entire brain, for the CFL players, it was 65% thinner compared to the non-CFL players. By comparison, they say folks that are that have sort of mental or challenges, et cetera, or brain trauma, they, usually those are around 5 or 10%. So in the CFL, it's 65%. And the other one was, when I read it, it was regarding the electrical, the EEG for the brain. In some of the cases of CFL players, they had electrical impulses that were comparable to folks that were in a coma, but yet they're still functioning day to day. So I think the next step here is, now they've done this with folks that are still on the planet, they can replicate the similar findings for kids that are maybe have played high school football in their 20s, and I guess it's, you know, trying to measure the duration. So how many years does it take to get to this level? But I read that study, and as a parent, when you read that, having your kid play, you know, that sport, regardless of position, is quite scary.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, there's a reflection in that in the registrations for tackle football right now. They've plummeted over the last a few years because of this, and it's why a sport like flag football is becoming so popular. It's downright eerie. And you, I love the point that you made here is, you know, we understand, we read all the CTE stuff that has been done in the past on players that have passed away, and people have always wondered, at what point in time is there going to be something that comes to light, some way to test and measure things for players that are living? And this is a step in that direction, most certainly, and the more and more information like this that there is, the more and more obvious impact that there's going to be on the sport, and it is quite remarkable.
I know you didn't have nearly the contact as a kicker, but does this frighten you?
It doesn't frighten. I had one concussion, I think, from football. It doesn't, you know, and three totals. And all of us as athletes, for the most part, there's probably, I don't know, something 1 to 5 quite likely that you suffer. But it doesn't, I'm not concerned about personally. I know a lot of the guys, all the guys I talk to, all the old guys talk about this all the time and how there's absolute concern for it. I do know that they speak to Morielli in this piece today in the Star, and he's like, hey, man, every single game, there was times that lightheaded and all the rest of it. And I know the times, any time that I was injured with this, and especially back in the day, there was no, I'm hurt, I can't go. No way, man. You had to go. You didn't want to lose your job, and you wanted to play on top of it. There's just a certain mentality out there that if you were able to play and not hurt your team, that you would go. So this is an ongoing, remarkable aspect of contact sports, and it's not going to decrease or go away. It's going to eventually change the contact sports that we play as it is right now.
I did find it interesting, Terry, that it was active players, but I'm also at the point where, I mean, it's just common knowledge. Football's not good for you. And if you choose to play it, you choose to play it. Like,
But it's not, now you're talking as adults, where the remarkable, like where things change at the grassroots level, of course, when you're signing, when your kid's saying, hey, I want to play football, and you have that conversation with a young man or a young woman that wants to play the game.
Thanks for bringing it up, Terry. We were going to try and find some time to touch on it before the week ran out, and I did get some tweets about it as well. We'll take a break. More of your calls next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and Rick, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hola, amigos, por favor.
Well, thank you. And you?
Very good.
Hola, amigos, por favor. I don't know much Spanish, man, but does that make sense?
I don't know.
Perfect sense. Cerveza. Cerveza.
Yeah. That's all you need to know is a few words like that.
Okay.
Get you through life, man. Go ahead.
That's like what Johnny Mandel's been doing. But a comment on him, like, do you think he's ever really been like mental shape to, as a pro, like to play? I know physically in college he used to get by and stuff, but he had like a weaker arm as a pro. But I mean,
used to get by. I sorry to cut you off, but I think that was his problem. He's the first freshman to win the Heisman Trophy. I think it was so easy for him that he didn't develop any good habits to work. Like
so that's, all mentally.
I think it's just it was so easy for him his first year in college he didn't develop the need or the skills to get better and work on his game and stay in shape.
To me, there's more about like what was life for him at home as a kid, and how was he raised to think, and how, like the level of humility and all the rest of it. Like Johnny Manziel was a problem way before winning the Heisman, I bet.
But listen to this, guys. Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so I think he's got issues, but that's not really what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about the Jets, and I'm glad
the Jets issues.
Happy that Wheeler came out and basically said that this is our year. We need to make the playoffs, and I think they need to make the playoffs and make even a little bit of a splash. You know, like that win around, maybe two, something like what Edmonton did. And I know we don't have McDavid, but we got a lot. Now, last year,